Hey there, students. Welcome back to Intensive Review. And in this segment, we are going to be looking at USHC 1.4, which is about the birth of the Constitution. So we're going to be looking at the Articles of Confederation and then going on to take a look at the Constitutional Convention. So first of all, we need to know that the Articles of Confederation, we have a weak plan of government. This is the first plan of government for the United States, and keep in mind that it's a reaction to the excesses of the British. And the first order of business is to make sure that a central authority from outside of our states cannot dominate things, and that is exactly what's set up here, is that the Articles of Confederation really, they set up what's really a glorified military alliance. Now, eventually, they're found to be too weak to govern the United States and are replaced by the Constitution. Now, let's take a quick look at the Articles versus the Constitution. You could very well get a question about this asking you to compare and contrast. Now, first of all, when we look at the Articles, we see the type of federalism here. Keep in mind, federalism, two layers of government. And what we see here, a firm league of friendship. All right, which I think about that Beatles song, I get by with a little help from my friends or something like that. That's really kind of the attitude here. We're in a firm league of friendship, all right, we're just friends, all right? Kind of in the states or in the friend zone, you could think of it that way. Representation of states, equal. Doesn't matter how big your state is because we are in a confederation, which has a connotation that we have a loose sort of alliance. And if there's an alliance, you think about NATO or something like that. The United States doesn't get more votes just because we're the biggest country in NATO. We get one vote. It's an alliance, and that's how it's treated. Taxation. Only the states could levy taxes. The central government could request taxes, but then again, that's not taxes because taxation implies force. So the central authority had no power to tax. As far as the powers of Congress, we're really looking at foreign relations. We're looking at the Army and Navy, at declaring war, at ambassadors and treaties and that sort of thing. That the whole point of this Confederation Congress was to deal with the war and deal with foreign relations. And as far as amendments, they had to be unanimous. Now keep in mind, this was so no member of the Confederation could have the will of someone else imposed on their state. Now, that's great as far as in terms of liberty, but in terms of workability, it's not so great because how often can you get 13 people to come to a unanimous decision? As far as problems with the Articles, first of all, you've got Shays' Rebellion, all right? With Shays' Rebellion, these are disgruntled farmers in Massachusetts led by Daniel Shays. And what happens here is they're taking over courthouses, they're just running around with guns and all of that kind of stuff. And the state of Massachusetts, they can't do anything about it. This goes on for months, and the state of Massachusetts isn't able to put down this rebellion. So a lot of people are saying that we need a central government, and one of the jobs of which is to put down rebellions, to assist the states in putting down rebellions like this with a stronger central government. And then there's a bad economy. Keep in mind the economy's going really bad at this time, all right? They've been printing up these continental notes that are paper money that's pretty much worthless. And the war left everyone kind of in a bad way economically. So the Constitutional Convention, which met in Philadelphia in 1787, for what purpose? The stated purpose being to amend the Articles of Confederation. Now, boy, did they amend them, all right? They get there and they pretty much start off with, hey, let's just throw the baby out with the bathwater. So as far as this Constitutional Convention, lots of conflict, but also lots of compromise. Our Constitution is the result of lots of compromises. And so when we compare the Constitution with the Articles, we can see here that it's a more perfect union. It's not a firm league of friendship. Now, friendship, you can just walk away from. A union, keep in mind, you're putting a ring on your finger, all right? That everybody is kind of in this, and there's not like, okay, you can just walk away just at the slightest little provocation. This is a union. This is meant to be more perfect. Now, keep in mind the Articles of Confederation said that they were going to be perpetual. So, you know, the Constitution doesn't. But then again, if the Articles said they're going to be perpetual, then maybe this should be even more perpetual. It's a more perfect union. We want to create a stronger central government. And as far as representation of states, that you've got two types of representation. That you've got in the House, you've got this bicameral legislature, which in the House is represented by population, and in the Senate is represented two per state. And then as far as taxation, the federal government also has the power to tax in addition to the state. So you have two levels of taxation, state and federal. And as far as this goes, in addition to the articles, you also have the power of taxation, interstate commerce, currency, and to crush rebellions. All right, now keep in mind interstate commerce meaning commerce between states. So what we see here is not only a government that deals with external relations with the rest of the world, but also relationships between the states, and a government that has some power to actually compel states to do things. And finally, the amendment process. We want this to be difficult, but we don't want it to be impossible, like with the articles. And what they say here is that, let's say that two-thirds of each House of Congress proposes amendments, okay? Think of this like a marriage proposal, where Congress gets down on one knee. I'm going to try to stay on screen, but anyway, you get my point. And then the states get to decide, three-fourths of the states, 75%, get to decide, do I want that amendment or not? And this process has only been done 27 times, all right, since the Constitution. So there have been only a handful of amendments, and most of them have traveled in packs. So in your lifetime, the Constitution has not been amended at the time of this recording. So lots of compromises here, okay? So first of all, when you look at the states, you look at all this data here, you've got northern states, you've got southern states, you've got slave states, you've got free states, you've got small states and large states. All right, that everybody is bringing their own agenda to the table, and you've got to get them to agree on a plan for government. This is not going to be easy. So first of all, James Madison shows up with the Virginia Plan. Now, this is James Madison with the large state plan. All right, now, the New Jersey plan is going to be the small state plan. Doesn't really matter who did. It's not going to show up on your exam. And as far as the Virginia plan, this large state plan, that it's going to have a bicameral legislature, a two-house legislature, and it's going to be based on population. Now, meanwhile, the New Jersey plan is going to have a unicameral legislature with one vote per state. Now, if the New Jersey plan sounds familiar, that's because it is. The New Jersey plan is really more of a plan to amend the Articles of Confederation that you see here, one vote per state, a unicameral legislature, which really, let's just kind of give the articles a little steroid injection or something like that. I don't think it was illegal back then. Not that that makes it right. So, the Great Compromise. All right, what you see as far as this Great or Connecticut Compromise, that you have two houses. You've got the House of Representatives, the lower house, which is based on population, and it's elected by voters directly. And then you have the Senate, which has two votes per state, and this is indirect representation, appointed by the state legislature. So another thing is you've got an element of democracy in the House, and then you've got an element of aristocracy in the Senate. And then there's the three-fifths, or what I call the not-so-great compromise. And this is really what you see here for the South, three-fifths of a person for congressional representation, counting slaves. This goes back to a taxation formula from the Articles, I believe. And slaves will count for three-fifths of a person. Now, you don't let your slaves vote. The slaves are treated as property in every other legal judgment. But at the same time, South Carolina and Georgia were going to walk out without this. And then for the North, you have this slave trade compromise that Congress can regulate, which means kind of ban, the international slave trade 20 years after the Constitution. And they do exactly that. So that is the other end of the three-fifths compromise. And then you've got the Electoral College. Now, of course, don't apply to the Electoral College. Don't tell your guidance counselor you'll apply there. Someone will laugh at you. But this Electoral College is the way that we're going to elect the president. And what happens here is that it is a federal election, not a national election. Some people ask, you know, why isn't it that the person with the highest popular vote wins the presidency? Because we don't have a national election. We vote by states. And each state will send electors. Each state gets its number of senators plus the number of representatives. So every state gets at least three, because every state has two senators and one representative. So you have partly on population that this is based on, but then the other side of the coin is the smallest states get a little bit of a bump, because Wyoming, they get three votes. Meanwhile, I mean, that's three votes for 500,000 people, whereas California does not have the same sort of ratio. For California, when you calculate their electoral votes, it's about every 700,000 people gets an electoral vote. So still a little bit of a nod to the small states, but the large states do get more electors. And again, as far as amending the Constitution, two-thirds of Congress to propose an amendment, and then three-fourths of the states to ratify an amendment. Now, speaking of ratification, nine is your number. That there would be nine states that would be necessary in order to ratify the Constitution for it to take effect. Now, of course, for it to be practicable, you've really got to have all 13 on board, but they would get the process started when nine states ratified. And this is to approve the Constitution. Now, of course, the Constitution is something we all love today, but it was pretty controversial at the time. And you had two camps of people. You had the Federalists, who supported the Constitution, and the Anti-Federalists, who opposed. They believed that it was creating too strong of a central government that would be subject to abuses of power. And these Anti-Federalists are, you know, pretty strong in a lot of states. And what happens here is the Federalists, they say, we need a stronger central government. We need a better economy. We need law and order. Whereas the Anti-Federalists, they say that you don't have term limits, that this is not a Republican Constitution, small r Republican, that this sets up more of a monarchy or an aristocracy, that there's no Bill of Rights, that if we're going to allow for a stronger central government, we need to have a Bill of Rights. And another thing that was said here is this does not create a federal government, a government with two layers, but a national government, a government that is thoroughly dominated by the central authority that will eclipse the states, that maybe one day the states will have little more to do than issue driver's licenses. The Anti-Federalists kind of had a point, didn't they? Now, as far as that goes, you could say the Federalists, maybe they won because the Constitution was ratified. That's kind of the simplistic version. Now, of course, you've got James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and John Jay, who wrote The Federalist, or The Federalist Papers. And this was a group of essays that was written in order to persuade people, specifically in the very large and important state of New York, where there was some very heavy anti-federalist sentiment, that the Constitution does not threaten you, that the Constitution is your friend, that the Constitution is not creating a monarchical, aristocratic government. And Madison, Hamilton, and Jay, you should remember those guys because you're an American and that's what Americans do, that they were able to get the Constitution ratified in the state of New York, but not without the promise of a Bill of Rights. Now, of course, the Federalists, they wanted a strong central government, and Hamilton wrote in Federalist 84, we don't need a Bill of Rights. But the Anti-Federalists would not budge on that. And so the compromise here, which is really the final compromise that created the Constitution, this compromise was on the issue of the Bill of Rights. And the Federalists, they said, you know what? If the Anti-Federalists, if the more moderate Anti-Federalists will come on board, then in the first session of Congress, we will amend the Constitution to include a Bill of Rights. And that's exactly what happened. Now, keep in mind that the last part of the Bill of Rights, the 10th Amendment, this amendment that says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And this is really kind of bring the pendulum back, that the Articles actually started with a statement like this, that the states are sovereign except when they've expressly delegated something. Then we've got the original draft of the Constitution came out of Philadelphia, and this Constitution created this stronger central government. The Bill of Rights says, hey, we kind of want a compromise here, that we want to make sure that this government is thoroughly limited and that it does not infringe upon the rights of the states. So we see that consensus here, this bundle of compromises that produce the Constitution as we know it today. And with that, we'll be moving on to talk about the principles of the Constitution in the next segment. I hope y'all will join me. See you in a bit.